welcome to Courage Cocktail. I'm your host, Leanne McClymont. Glad you could join me today. I look forward to today's program. And I have to tell you, listen, gang, there's a lot of opportunities to talk about cancer. And I often decline them, especially on our show, Courage Cocktail. Well, I've made an exception today. And I've made an exception for an exceptional story of an exceptional patient with a remarkable story of not only describing the journey of cancer, but also what it takes to solve this problem and what's the inspiration to moving forward in creating some disruption in the current way of doing business. So I hope you join with me, stay with me for this show. I have a wonderful guest who's brought along his brother. The guest's name is Marty Smith, and his brother is Drew Smith. And I want to welcome you both to the show, gentlemen.
No, thanks, Leanne. That's great.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, Marty, now that was a build-up, but I have to tell you, I get all kinds of opportunities to talk about cancer, and I am a survivor, mercifully, thanks to so many other great people. And I wanted to ask you if you could help our listeners understand, what are we talking about? How do you know what you know? And the first half of the show, let's talk about what you've learned in that process of being a patient.
Sure. How I know what I know is I kept getting colds that wouldn't go away, and that led to a meeting with a great oncologist at the University of North Carolina, Dr. Hank Van Deventer, and I told Hank that my father has chronic lymphocytic leukemia, and he assured me that that was not probably what I had. And then he called me about a week later and said, sure enough, you have leukemia. So,
well, when I thought about the tell us what you know, I was also referring to how do you, your experience with this diagnosis happened, how long ago, how did you go through treatment, what's involved now, and let's just kind of frame this whole content of the program just so that people understand that what led you to the remarkable work that you're doing now was this entree point.
Yeah, I went into chemo. I actually had a great conversation with Dr. Van Deventer. I said, listen, can you treat me as if riding a bicycle across the United States is more important than my longevity? And he said he could.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I wanted to, for my entire life, I've wanted to ride a bicycle across the country. And so that was a dream that had been deferred for 20 years, 30 years. And when you hear cancer and your name in the same sentence, immediately you think of those lost opportunities. And I thought that was a lost opportunity. I thought that dream was gone. And so one way that cancer patients kind of empower themselves is to recover those things that they think that have been kind of, you know, crushed by cancer. And so I asked him if, and I actually, at that point in my cancer journey, it was more important for me to be able to do that bicycle ride, that 3,300-mile bicycle ride, than anything else. And so I asked him if he could do that, and he said he could.
It's almost like, keep me alive until I get from one coast to the other.
That's right.
And then the party, whatever you want to happen,
after
let
that,
it happen.
After that, it's all gravy from there. That's exactly right. In fact,
I so get it, Marty. You don't realize. I'm sure there are tons of listeners out there who understand that. So what were you doing before this lovely cold snuck up on you?
I was a director of e-commerce. I managed a multi-million dollar website.
Really? I didn't realize.
Yeah, I designed my first website in 1999. I'm an old consumer products goods guy. I fell in love immediately when I designed my first website. I learned all the HTML, did all the image processing, did all the copy, because you know I couldn't afford to have people help me. And that was the thing I loved to do. I mean, I really love creating websites and helping people create online marketing.
So along the way, all these experiences fuel into what it is you're currently doing. But the e-commerce stuff, tell me a little bit about that. What's that all about?
I mean, there are a handful of people that can make millions of dollars online.
And you're one of them.
Well, I've made my teams that I've managed, and I would never say it's me because, it literally takes a village to make money online. But teams I've managed have made over $30 million online. And we never had an average order value more than $62, which means we did hundreds of thousands of transactions to earn that $30 million. So.
Wow, that's an accomplishment. When I consider all the things that you've learned in building websites and living in the digital marketplace, I couldn't help but understand your new world is certainly your platform, your interest in helping cancer, killing cancer is your quote unquote.
Yeah, that's right, waterboarding cancer.
Okay. Really comes from this one word that you framed the term was cancerpreneur.
Yes. And one of the things that happened in Martin's Ride while I was riding across the United States was I thought, oh, well, surely I'll have an epiphany. I will know what to do with the rest of my life. I thought that epiphany would happen in Utah or some place like that. there was no lightning bolt. There was no burning bush. And so it turns out riding a bicycle across the country is actually a pretty full-time job. And we got to Santa Monica. I had no idea. Having had quit my job, I had no idea what I would do next. I knew I was going to be broke because every dollar that we raised on Martin's Ride, and we raised about $30,000, went to Duke for cancer research. And so I came back, and I had to immediately go back into chemo. I knew I was sick again in Colorado. I had a fairly large lymph node under my arm in Colorado. And so I knew that Dr. Van Deventer's timing was perfect, that I was going to have to go back into chemotherapy when I got back, and that this chemotherapy would be pretty extensive, and it was. So.
Spoken like a true warrior, when you made the decision to go cross country, what was that all about?
I think there was, you know, cancer robs you of any sense of the power over your own life. And so I was very depressed for about a year, and I think I recovered me by starting to plan for this ride across the country. I felt like, you know, well, cancer is going to do what cancer is going to do, but I'm going to ride a bicycle across the United States. So,
one of the things that I've had the blessing of learning is that I am not my disease. I am not this pathology.
Right.
You know, well, occasionally I am, but on most of the days, most of the weeks, I'm not. And one of the things that I am inspired in, I think our Courage Cocktail kitchen really is attracted by this ingredient. You were willing to take a huge risk. You risked your life. You left your job. And then you had this goal in mind.
Right.
When you wanted to raise money, for it ended up going to Duke.
That's
right.
That's right. The first event went to Duke. $27,000 went to Duke.
Unbelievable. You're saying that there were subsequent events?
Well, we are working on other ways to help cancer centers raise research money now. Uh-huh. Our crowdfunding platform will launch on October 1st, and we hope to help cancer centers raise an additional $1 million for using that platform where they can tap into the power of crowds, which is one of the things I learned to do as a director of e-commerce. So
I want everyone, listeners, there is a very specific website here. The website is www.storyofcancer.org. That's www.storyofcancer.org. And that will develop or help people kind of find their way through multiple channels. Is that right?
That's right. I mean, there are basically three things we're doing. We're doing this crowdfunding platform to help directly donate to cancer research. It's a very important idea because there's a lot of very well-meaning charities whose most of their money tends to go to the perpetuation of an event or something like that. None of our money will do that. All of our money goes to the lab to cure cancer, period, full stop.
Drew, you're being awful quiet over there.
Yeah, they're very rare, actually.
This is Martin's show.
I understand that, but I'm getting a little sense here that we have a firebrand in the room. He's just blown an understanding up that a lot of these not-for-profits, I'm going to take a shot here, those pink ribbon events are about perpetuating events. Is that what you're saying? That's what you believe?
Yeah, I'm a marketing guy, and you know, when you look at most of that money going to the perpetuation of an event, and very little of it, if any, in some cases, going to actual research. You know, what I'm calling for is a new cancer research revolution where we focus on curing the disease, which, by the way, can make all of the other things, the events and the services, moot, because let's solve the problem. You know?
We're actually trying to make the donating very interesting and being specific and able to donate where you want to and how you want to. So if you do find something interesting in cancer research, you can donate specifically to that.
Right.
So you're not under, you're not promoting your physicians over at UNC's program. It necessarily, I mean, we God bless this group and what they're doing, continued success. But you're, in addition to that, you're saying, hey, listen, just donate to the research,
right.
End of story,
exactly,
so that
right.
It can be the end of the story.
Right.
Oh, that's really well put. I like that.
Hey, I'm in radio for a reason.
Yeah, that's right. Leanne, yeah, the courage cocktail strikes again. Yeah, absolutely.
And the story is everything.
I noticed.
Yeah.
And Drew, I would like you to explain to our listener, tell me, how do you know about this story? You're Marty's brother, but how have you helped?
I have an opportunity now to help,
yes.
Which just happened, you know, at this time in my life, and it's not something I was involved with in the past with my brother, and it's something that I will be involved with in the future.
Yeah, he missed Martin's ride, and that was a great.
That was one thing. I wasn't able to go on that because of work,
yeah.
And that's not going to happen again. So, you know, and just as things have become important and more precious to Martin, so have they for me. So,
yes.
You know, it's a trickle-down effect. He has cancer. I don't, but his has also affected my life in a good way.
In fact, he knows he will not have chronic lymphocytic leukemia because his genome has been sequenced. So,
So
he knows that he's in the clear. In fact, his genes are much more interesting to Duke. He and my sister's genes are much more interesting to Duke than my and my father's.
We gave blood and participated in a family-driven study. To try to tie it all together and see what the genetic links were. And they gave me a clean bill of health, and I attribute that to Martin coming first and in the line
right.
of kids and cleaning it out for me.
That's right.
Kind of breaking the mold. Well, I have this just leads me to so many questions about, you're talking about, to this back to the disease here, but essentially it's something that is a genetic issue, this particular form of cancer.
I mean, they think there is a genetic component to CLL in some cases, yes.
So. And so you all, your family, I imagine there are three children, two boys and a girl?
Yeah, you got that right, yes.
Okay,
Our sister Caroline can't be here today because she lives in Colorado. So.
Well, Caroline, we're shouting out to you. Thank you for being a part of your brother's life and for helping us learn more about story of cancer.
Actually, I rode with Caroline for 3 days in Colorado, and that was some of the most fun I've ever had on a bicycle. So,
oh, isn't that wonderful? Well, can you tell us a little bit about the story of you two? You're in North Carolina now, but something tells me you're not a native.
Yeah, no, we're Yankees.
Really?
We're the new native.
We're the invading Yankee horde. Yeah, that's right. So I remember one time being at a dinner with my grandmother and my aunt and my ex-wife, and my ex-wife turned to me after the fifth time that my aunt called her a Yankee, and she said, "That's not necessarily a good thing, is it?" And I said, "In this context, no." I moved down here when I left corporate America. I had been living in Chicago. We grew up in Greenwich, Connecticut, where our father worked on Wall Street.
Uh-huh.
And so this is very different than where we grew up. So,
well, Bill and I, as you know, we've traveled from New York City here.
And Upper East Side, yeah.
So. Yeah, the Upper East Side. Yeah. I have to come clean with people because the city could mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people.
That means a very specific thing, actually. So.
Yeah, really. Well, fortunately, we've landed up in Hillsborough, North Carolina, which is a lot leafier.
It's beautiful, yeah.
So we're very blessed, and we love North Carolina, but we have listeners from all over the country. And one of the reasons that we have listeners all over the country is because of the hyper-local flavor of Courage Cocktail.
Right.
And that is, I'm bringing you folks here a story about a person who's diagnosed with cancer who made it his business to take this dream of taking a bike ride across the country.
Right.
And devil be damned, so to speak, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know what would happen next. And sometimes that can be scary, but one of the things that cancer does for you is it teaches you that all that control you thought you had was actually a mirage, you know, was an illusion. And so it helps you adjust and surf life instead of trying to control everything. If I tried to control everything on Martin's ride, we never would have gotten across the country because it went south almost immediately. You know, all those plans and all those ways of doing things that we thought would work just didn't.
All right, let's talk about that Martin's ride. How many bikes, how many of you guys are out there? What? How long did it take to ramp up, so to speak? And how long did it take to finish the bike ride?
Took 60 days.
60 days?
Yeah, 60 days. We rode between 50 and 100 miles a day. What didn't work was we were planning our route at night before the next day, and that didn't work at all. And my driver, who was also kind of the chief lifeguard, said to me, you know, I can't both plan the route and then drive and then make sure you're okay. And I said, well, what's your option? This is in Tennessee. This is in Savannah, Tennessee. And I said, you know, he said, well, I want to quit. And I said, let's talk about other options, because at that point I had rented an RV, you know, and so I had $10,000 into the RV. And because all the money that we raised went to Duke, and not one of those dollars went to me. I'm paying for this out of my savings. And so I said, well, let's work something out. I said, what is it you want? He said, I don't want to have a southerly route, which I designed a non-mountainous route because I didn't want to climb mountains, which it turns out was wrong. I mean, the things I appreciate the most from that trip were climbing Mount Monarch, 13,300 feet, which, by the way, nobody thought I would make, you know, so they are actually waiting halfway down Mount Monarch for me. They were sure that I would never get to the top. But and the reason they thought that was because on the first day in Colorado, it was the only day I quit was the first day in Colorado. We got up above 9,000 feet and I couldn't breathe, and I have asthma as well. And I was riding with my sister, who can ride like the wind, but she was riding with me, and I just couldn't go on. And so I stopped, and that was the only day in 60 days that I stopped. And I got in the van and we went home. And I took the day off before Mount Monarch to try and figure out a plan to be able to make that. To be able to get up to the top of the 13,000 foot mountain. And I decided that every mile, once the elevation went into a greater than 6% grade, every mile I would stop and I would fuel and I would take a picture. And the reason I took the picture is it made me calm my breathing down. And then I have all these amazing pictures, and people are like, well, you know, why did you take that picture? I was like, well, you don't understand the backstory. The backstory is I'm in an 8% grade. I've been riding for better part of 3 hours, and I'm not even a quarter up this mountain. And so the best call I've ever made in my life was when I got to the top of Mount Monarch, and I called my team and I said, you coming up or what? You
know, so. Come and get me.
Come and get me. Hey, I'm waiting on you. You know.
And what did they say? Are you kidding?
They were expecting me. Like I said, they were parked halfway down waiting for me to come back down. And they said, you know, we'll be right there. And, you know, the thing about spending the better part of a day climbing a mountain is the 20 minutes that you get to go down the other side, because that's when it's all worth it. You know, 65 miles an hour on a bicycle.
I don't know. I don't want to hear this. Are you serious?
I mean, I could smell my brakes burning. And they, by the way, were doing absolutely nothing at all. I mean, they weren't slowing me down hardly at all. So every now and then I'd have to pull into the truck turnouts because you know, it was just, there's so much intensity. You know, if you make a little mistake, you know, you're going to be spread all over this road. And so you pull, and I would sit there and I'd try and calm down. And then, you know, Jeremy would come up behind me and say, come on, we got to get out of the turnout, you know. And so I get back on the road, and it was just an amazing adventure. And it was something I'm so glad I did. So
when you told me that story just now, you said something. You said you're surfing life.
Right.
Tell me about that.
Well, I mean, I think I was pretty much of a control freak, you know, before this. So I mean, I was pretty much type A, you know, career-oriented guy who wanted to accomplish things. And, you know, then I heard cancer in my name in the same sentence. Now, I had been pre-disastered in a way, because I also have multiple sclerosis. So you would think that I would be able to adjust to hearing that kind of news. MS has been tough. You know, it made the ride difficult. It's actually the thing that makes my life more difficult day to day than the cancer. Mm-hmm. But the cancer will kill you, you know, and so that got my attention, and it was scary. And so that's why.
So, Drew, I have a question for you. Mom and Dad are alive. Sister Caroline's over in Colorado. Mm-hmm. They're looking at you like, you are not going to let him do this. You are not. We're going to sit on your brother, Martin. I mean, I'm just thinking about this as a mother now. Forgive me. Yeah, but I'd be, golly, I'd be working very hard.
That's firstborn son. It's going to happen.
Well, you know, my mom. So one of the goals of Martin's ride was to see every family member. And I saw my mother in Tennessee. She lives in Kentucky. And so she came and saw us.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. And, wow. And she said to me, Martin, when you get to the Mississippi, that's a big body of water.
You can stop there.
And I was like, Mom, you don't understand. If I can get to the Mississippi, I'm going to Santa Monica. You know? Yeah, so.
She was hedging his ride. You know?
She's like, that's a big body of water. You can finish it. She said to me, you can finish it later.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll still mean the same.
Yeah. You can do it later.
They teach you this at mommy school.
Yes,
you know,
it's a universal condition.
It's that's like, right. Yeah, it's okay, kids. We're going to be just fine. What about Dad? Where was Dad in this journey here?
I saw Dad when we were near Arizona, and I called up my father, who is an amazing man, and I said to him, Dad, I don't have enough money to get home, which is something that I wish I could tell you was a surprise for him to hear, but not so much, you know. And so he said to me, well, I want you to meet me at this restaurant. My dad was a former engineer before he became a pension plan manager and worked on the street, and he said, I want you to meet me at this restaurant at this time, you know, gave me very precise, you know, mapping details. And we met there, and he said, well, how much do you need? And I said, I need $1,000 because I had agreed to pay for the ride home for the two people that I brought along. I hired as employees on this trip. And so I got to lunch, and he handed me an envelope, and I didn't look at it until I got back into the car, and he was gone, and he gave me $3,000. In fact, the last $100 of that I gave to my brother for his birthday when I got back. Yeah. So.
Dad, did you hear that? He didn't spend it all, and he took care of his baby brother.
But the other thing amazing about my father is that he knew if I was asking for $1,000, he did the calculation about how much money I really needed, and he came within $100 of that, because you know what? My dad worked on the street for a reason. You know, so. Yeah.
Well, I hope that we all, listeners, these are two brothers who are smiling broadly, but I can tell you they've been through a lot together, and I need to build the story. So here you are, you meet your dad, you get the envelope.
Yeah, I get the envelope. Yeah.
This is good news, but you're still in Arizona. You still got a few little places to come.
We had some miles to, in fact, the hardest part of the trip was to come, because the hardest part of the trip was when we dropped into California at Tahoe. And rode the Sierras all the way down to L.A. You know, stupid Martin, I'm thinking California is flat, right? Because I've been to L.A. and I saw the beach, you know. Well, guess what? California is nothing but mountains. And so we some of the hardest days actually were that last week. Mount Baldy, they have a pro tour that goes up Mount Baldy, and those guys complain. And I got to tell you, that almost killed me. I mean, that was an entire day of riding up a mountain, you know. And then the funny part of that story is, so imagine I'm taking all these risks. I'm coming down mountains at 65 miles an hour. The night of Mount Baldy, I'm sitting on near the Nevada-California border. I'm sitting on a deck that was out in this lake. The lake was so cold, and it felt so great on my legs. Out there alone, by the way, it was about 8 o'clock at night, and I had my iPhone in my pocket, and I'm sitting there, and I'm dipping my legs into this, like, cold water, and it just felt great. I slid right off into the lake.
Dear.
Now, it's like 20 feet deep, and I am having a really hard time getting back onto the dock. I'm thinking, okay, killed by drowning in this lake, you know. Cancer didn't get him, MS didn't get him, but boy, that lake got him, you know.
Mount Monarch didn't get him.
No, and so what really can motivate you is when you think, this is it, you know. And I got back up on the dock, and then I pulled out my iPhone to call my dad and tell him I almost got killed. And then, of course, the iPhone and water do not mix well together.
Yeah,
it's not
a good cocktail.
No. So
here you go. So you make it out. You're there. You get out of that quiet little world. You dry off. You go home, and you start off another day. Now you know it's mandated. Destiny waits. If that didn't get you,
right,
you knew you were going to win.
Right.
Come on. Because that's exactly how I'd look at this.
Right.
You look the beast right in the eye. Now, where are you from that at? You wake up the next morning, you head over to California. Santa Monica?
Yeah. We had some more riding yet to do. We were about 300 miles out of L.A. at that point. And so we came into, I remember the last day in the Angeles Forest. Even that last day, we had three better than 2,000 elevation climbs, you know. And I'm sitting there thinking, come on, I'm done, you know. At this point, I'm so cooked, you know, stick a fork in me, you know. And so I come down out of in Santa Barbara. I came down out of the Angeles Forest, and then it was all like Santa Barbara traffic, you know. And I was like, you know what? We're going to declare victory and go to Santa Monica. We're going to drive the RV to Santa Monica. We're done. And because it got a little bit dangerous to be on the roads.
Sure.
And so I declared victory, and we declared Martin's ride over. And then I had to start figuring out how to get everybody home, you know. So, because this is You know, this is not an insubstantial. You got bikes and you got equipment and you got, you know. So
you got the RV. Well, I imagine RV. That's a rental.
It was a rental. And in fact, the guy said to me, why didn't you just buy one of these? You know, we would have bought it back from you. I was like, yeah, now you tell me that. You know, you know? And we had a little damage. We had a mirror that went, that we clipped in Yosemite. And so we, you know, we had to make good on that. But I'll tell you another funny RV story. So we go down to Santa Monica. We have a hotel room right on the beach. And it just did not feel right to me. I said to the people at the hotel, well, where do we park our RV? They were like, well, you just park it right next to the hotel, which was like an alley, you know. And I said, okay, so I'm going to park this RV that I'm supposed to hand in tomorrow next to this alley where there were, I don't know if you know Santa Monica, but all kinds of interesting people were there. Let's put
all
it
right,
that way.
All right.
And I said, you know what? We're not going to stay here. We're going to go down to the Marriott by the airport, and we're going to park in that big lot, and we're going to be safe. And my guys were like, no, we want to stay on the beach. I was like, sorry, you know. They said, well, yeah, we've already paid the hotel bills. And I said, too bad, you know, because at that point, you know, we were also cooked. I mean, really, we were just also exhausted. That it did, being on the beach or not did not matter at that point. We were just in bed sleeping, you know. So pretty much. So
you get up on the next morning. You've done it. You now know, a greater victory awaits me. A greater prize.
I wish that was the case. I mean, I felt kind of depressed. I mean, you know, one of the things about having a dream is when you accomplish it, there's this big hole. Another funny story, I come back and I'm sitting in getting a CAT scan for this football size lymph node that I had in my stomach. And this nurse says to me, would you ever do it again? And she asked this very, you know, Martin's right. I was on the cover of the Duke Notes magazine that month. And so everybody knew me and knew who I was. And she said, well, would you ever do that again? And I immediately said in a very aggressive way, no, you know. And what I realized was that the pain was still fresh, you know. So,
oh, time and memory.
That's right. That's right. Now I'm thinking about Canada because we're several weeks away. I mean, several years away from the ride. So now it's like, oh, yeah, it didn't hurt that much. Yeah, right.
Wow.
Well, my mother could answer that question. He's already done that once before.
Done that, yes. Been there.
He passed the Mississippi, so.
Well, you know, I know that we're going to be taking a little bit of a spot here to talk about a radio station and stuff, but stay with us. Listener, we're going to go forward, and if this is a radical story, you ain't seen or heard nothing yet. The story of a discovery, the story of a way of thinking about what's at stake to deal with fixing this disease we call cancer, and what are we doing about it? And I want you to all take a little break, take some time now, walk away for a little while, go to your computers if you have one. Go to www.storyofcancer.org. We will be back in a minute, and stay tuned.
WCOM, your all-volunteer community radio station in Carrboro, needs your support. Do you have an idea for a radio show? How about a background in engineering or computers? Are you interested in fundraising or just meeting a group of wonderful people? Please consider a donation of time or money to support this gem of the community. To find out more, please check out our website, www.wcomfm.org. That's www.wcomfm.org.
Welcome back to Courage Cocktail. I'm your host, Leanne McClymont. So happy you are with us this afternoon. I am thrilled to tell you we're running a program about two brothers and a patient, entrepreneur, and the meaning of cancerpreneur is where we're going to take the show for the second half. I want y'all to have an opportunity to visit the website, which is www.storyofcancer.org. Our guests today are Marty Smith and his brother Drew Smith, and in case you tuned in a little bit later than usual, our first half of the program was talking about Martin's Ride. Martin's Ride is a bike ride, and it was a cross-country from the Atlantic to the Pacific, and it was done, sponsored by Martin himself, to raise funds for cancer research. We had been talking about some few great stories, Marty, about RVs and crazy things, climbing mountains and surviving and then continuing a dream. And as we closed out our story, we were talking about the disappointment of achieving a goal.
Yes. Well, and returning home, I didn't know what I wanted to do next because there was no lightning bolt or epiphany. And so I was sitting in chemo, and my oncologist, Dr. Van Deventer, said, he actually told me about getting an NIH grant turned down. And I asked him how much money he needed to do this genetic research that he wanted to do, and he said he needed $15,000. And that was like a bad Saturday when I was a director of e-commerce. And so I thought, you know, there's got to be a way we can use the web to help with this. And that's how the idea of crowdfunding cancer research kind of jumped into my head. So,
wow. Now, for all you listeners, I need to go slowly here, because you are talking like a Northeastern person.
Sorry, and I've got fast and unintelligible. Okay,
and I've got my Southern ears on, right. Okay. Which I've worked and struggled to build. I have no intention of changing them. So we need to back up a little bit.
Sure.
And if I keep on asking questions, it's not that I don't get it; it's that I want to make sure it's crystal clear.
Sure.
Used a few fancy words there. And can you hear in the background, everyone, the train in Carrboro?
The lonely train apparently wants attention.
We are in the heart of Carrboro, which is in beautiful North Carolina, not far from Chapel Hill. And our radio station is based at the crossroads of two train tracks. And right about between the hours of noon and one, we always have a couple of visitors, trains that say, hello, Leanne, and Courage Cocktail.
You know, it's a great place to have this radio show, your Courage Cocktail, because, you know, courage is always something that occurs at the crossroads.
You betcha. That's exactly right. Well, I'm going to keep that and put that into my copy.
Hey, I'm a marketing guy, you know. So.
All right, Marty. Now let's get straight up here about, you said something about this idea, and the idea is take crowdsource funding, yeah, and then plus cancer. What are you talking about? What is crowdsource funding?
Most people know Kickstarter, and Kickstarter has done a very good job. They've raised almost $1 billion, $750 million for mostly creative projects, movies, people to do albums. And so basically what we want to do is that idea, but we want to allow cancer patients, their friends and families, to donate directly to the research. I'm funding this with my 401k and with my Atlantic BT salary. Atlantic BT is where I am the marketing director. It's the, you know, it's a web development company in Raleigh. And when I came to them and said, hey guys, I want to do this, not only did they say that they would help me create it, but they also, they're in dollar for dollar with me as well. So every dollar that I'm spending, they're spending on as well.
So that company based in Raleigh, North Carolina, is, yes, Atlantic BT.
That's right. Atlantic BT, it's started by a guy named John Jordan, who's an amazing man, and is run by another amazing man, Mark Fulkrod. Mark is the person who hired me knowing full well that I have cancer and said, you know, come here and you make a contribution. And then when I went to them and said, you know, I need to retire, guys, I'm getting really tired. And they said, well, what do you want to do when you retire? I said, well, I want to run my cancer foundation and I want to create this crowdfunding platform. They said, whoa, there, we can help with that. And so and to their credit, they saw this opportunity as a way to build a tool that many people may use. You know, you might have a store one day and use their crowdfunding tool that we help them create. So
we're talking a little bit more about that wonderful expression you taught me and listeners, we were off the mic, but it was this expression that, Leanne, I come from the help first and worry about everything else second.
Yes.
Where did you get that gospel?
You know, it's really, if you think about the internet, I mean, the internet right now is that you really need to help, mentor, coach, share first. If you don't do those things, then you have no credibility to ask for anything. If you do those things, then you will be repaid in people's advocacy and in their links and in their likes and in their shares. And that's the currency of the web now. The currency of the web is social. And so to give first and assume that you will be given back to is the way it's the best way to operate, I know. And it's really the only way to operate I know now. You know, so I blog every single day. I write.
What do you blog about?
I blog about two things. Mostly right now I'm blogging about internet marketing, but pretty soon I will switch that and I'll start to talk about the cancer journey. On our website that you've so kindly mentioned several times, we ask people to share their story, because it is the stories that we create in a community that's how we're going to cure cancer. So,
when you say that, how are we going to cure cancer? I can't help but say, wow, that's bold. That's gutsy. How am I going to cure cancer? I'm going to wake up one morning, I'm going to cure cancer.
Right.
Tell me about it, Marty.
We want to do it in our lifetime.
Yeah.
In our lifetime.
I mean, that's the key idea, is to cure cancer now. And I think we're very, very close. The fact that I'm here, 20 years ago, having a blood count, white blood count above 30,000, as mine has been three times, would mean I would not be here talking to you on the radio today. So there's a great drug that I understand that you know as well, called Rituxan, that was made by Biogen, and that's the reason I'm here. And so technology is going to cure cancer. My belief is that if we focus on that, if we put all of our energies behind that, we will cure cancer. Now, cancer isn't one thing. There are 13 major cancers: breast, prostate, lung, the big three. But you know, I have a leukemia that only 30,000 people get every year, and yet there is a genetic fix that might be out of stage 3 trials by the end of the year, and so then that's gonna be as close to a cure as I ever get. Right now, we cure me by, when my Y count gets too high, we knock it back down. The problem is, cancer is very smart. You know, it learns, and so you have to change the cocktail. And in fact, we've fired all the bullets at it we can fire right now. And I stopped chemo about a year ago and said, you know what, we're done. We've reached a point of diminishing returns, and I don't want to trade great time now for the possibility of time later. And so my doctor said, well, I think you're going to be okay because I think you're going to be alive long enough for this this new genetic fix. And I said, okay, we'll play for that. You know.
Now, listeners, I don't know how many of you really can grasp this. I'm praying that not many of you can. But the drama of what Marty just shared is that we're in a race. Many of us as patients race against time. And we're racing against time and technology and clinical trials. Clinical trials are the fancy terms for experiments. They're carefully conducted experiments that involve humans by the time they're at stage three.
That's right. A lot of money, a lot of time.
A lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of capital. And we're talking about not just cash capital, intellectual capital, creative capital, social capital. And we happen to be in the heartbeat of clinical trials here in the world.
That's right. RTP.
So we happen to see a lot about this stuff. And the show that comes before me, Radio In Vivo, does a lot of work about what's in the pipeline. Much of it is clinical trials. So we are racing against time. We may all be in some point of our patient survivorhood. I would benefit from Rituxan. It was 10 years ago. It was relatively new. And I believe that is one of the reasons I'm on the radio talking to you today.
Yes.
But when we think about the fast pace of this disease, is it running faster than the technology?
You know, I think if we harness, if we use the web to harness, and we also, there's kind of two things that have to happen. We as patients and donors have a responsibility. That responsibility is to give our money to research.
Let's talk about that. We got to really nail this one down. This is a radical thought. What are you doing? We've got to incorporate Drew. We've got to talk about what it is you boys are up to now. And I love the way you just said to me, Leanne, we're patients and donors. We're not talking blood donors. We're talking money.
Right. Money. Yeah. Money solves a lot of problems. So my brother's actually running our store. And so, you know, maybe he wants to give you, he's an old Southern Season candy merchandiser. So
It's funny, Leanne, you talked about how the cure is going to come from a pool. It's going to come from a cooperative effort. Well, that's what Martin just told you, what the web is these days, is a huge cooperative effort. So we seriously believe the web is going to help cure cancer. And so that is our main focus, is to raise money from the web to give to cancer research.
And you're going to do that. Tell me the nuts and bolts here.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we're going to Kickstarter for cancer research. We're going to put up cancer research campaigns from UNC, Duke, the University of Wisconsin's Carbone Cancer Center, and Roswell Park in Buffalo. And those will be the first four. But the use of this tool, which is absolutely free, I'm paying for it, for cancer centers, you know, it's my way to pay back. I mean, how do you pay someone back for saving your life twice? Well, my way is to say, whatever I have is yours. And so 42 cancer centers in the country, cancer research centers in the country, will be able to use this tool for free. And every dollar that is donated to them goes to them. There is no money to the house.
Well, he literally means everything he has is yours, because everything he used to own is now online for sale.
Yeah, that's right.
From CDs to LPs to swim fins to furniture to bikes.
To my house. My house closed 2 weeks ago, so.
So
you're in for everything.
Yeah, I mean, I've pushed all the chips into the middle of the table.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So,
Dad, are you listening?
You know, by the way, Dad, that $3,000, you ain't getting it back, baby.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about this, Drew. Tell me, what are you doing here? What's going on with the store? How cool is that?
We're trying to build a store, and it's starting with all of Martin's stuff, all of his, and it's basically Martin's stuff, and so. We've put it online. We have good prices on it. It's good stuff. But we're also going to solicit people, and we don't want you to sell out to cure cancer. We want you to clean out to cure cancer. I want to take your stuff, and I want to sell it for you, and I want to give money to cancer research. I would also like to get into an environment where we kind of just touched about earlier, where they sell their stuff like they do for eBay, but I get a hit. So, you know, we have somewhat of an eBay store within our cancer foundation where you can come in and sell your stuff, and we'll provide traffic to our sites, and that's going to be one of our jobs, is to make sure people are coming to our sites and looking at the stuff for sale. And you do get paid for your stuff, but we'll take our eBay cut, so to speak, and put it towards cancer research.
Yeah, so. Now, would I, if I were to sell a bicycle on your store, could I say I'd like it to go to support the UNC physician who saved your brother's life?
Sure.
Can I direct it?
Sure.
That is really what we're touching upon here, is that we are being donation specific.
Okay.
We want you to feel like your money is doing exactly what you want it to do, not just being thrown into a pool and perpetuating some sort of cancer machine, you know?
Well, have you gotten pushback?
I mean, pushback, you mean from the cancer centers? Or?
Oh, I was thinking about the American Cancer Foundation. I was thinking about...
I haven't really talked to them.
Coleman Group, maybe? We're
I'm trying to stay way down on the radar.
Oh, we're really in North Dakota.
we're trying to do a sneak attack.
For now. Exactly. And that is one of our strategies.
Sure.
You know, we want to show up on the scene like that. You know,
so how can our listeners help you? What do you want us to do? To have traffic to the website?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's a whole lot of ways that you can help that don't involve money. I mean, one of the ways is we need editors, we need content contributors, we need people to help. We have Drew and I, and we need to build a team. We need, you name a internet marketing skill, we need it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's certainly one way to make a contribution. We need photographers, we need video people, we need everything.
We need Leanne. We need PR is what you're doing here for us today.
Yeah, that's right.
You know? Well, actually, I need you guys. The function is that I'm so in alignment with you in terms of causing enough disruption, which is Dr. Zhao's term over at Duke. He taught me this great word. I want to make it disruptive. I'm like, wow, you seem like such a mild-mannered guy. And he said, no, the way things are working right now are incremental change.
That's right.
Led to failure.
And we don't get there from incremental change.
No.
In fact, it's funny that you bring up disruption, because as an internet marketer, I will tell you that one of the ways I made $30 million online is not to do the same thing that everybody else is doing at exactly the same time. The way that my teams have made $30 million was we would be about 5 minutes ahead. And so in this case, you need to think disruptively. How can we do something completely different? I might get a nasty call one day from those people that you mentioned, but you know what? We're gonna be a rebel force, and we're gonna do what we can do.
Well, I love the idea that you're putting into my own hands a tool that I might be living in Pittsburgh. I have a devoted fan out in Pittsburgh, and I may want to support some research that's going on right here in the heart of North Carolina.
Exactly.
And because that particular program helped a particular friend or a particular family member.
We're going to empower you to do that.
And the reason I like this is that there's an accountability, and that we have that direct connection between what it is.
Yeah, I'm very glad that you brought that up, because unlike Kickstarter, there isn't. We're not going to be giving away tchotchkes here, you know. Mm-hmm. We may.
Now, you've got to explain that to the listeners who don't know, because there are people
out
there.
So the way Kickstarter functions is, you make a donation to let's say somebody wants to create a film, and they give you something that says, you know, you are an honorary director or something, right?
Right, I get a free t-shirt.
You get a free t-shirt, right? And so you give them $100, they give you a free t-shirt or whatever. So we won't be doing that. What we will be providing is access. And so your email will be part of that team's group. And that team that's working on that research will talk to you about what they're doing and say, hey, you know, Leanne, we just had this breakthrough. And then the reason we had this breakthrough is because of people like you who are helping us understand what we're doing better, and also because cash drives the ship, you know. So.
Well, and the results from that research, you will be part of that club who helped make that happen. And so we're trying to get that solidarity and trying to get that interest, that club membership. And you can be part of this club for this doctor's research. And a year later from now, when his research comes to head and it's doing great things, you helped make that happen.
Yeah. I mean, it's so tribal. I mean,
Tribal.
Dr. Van Deventer is, the most self-effacing guy you're ever going to meet. I mean, this man spends 45 minutes of time with me. He's never spent less than that. He jots notes that he gives me copies of before I leave. When we are sitting there talking about my life and possibly my death, we're doing so collaboratively. And so, you know, how do I pay this guy back? I pay him back by because he's never going to do this. He is never going to go online and say, hey, I'm great and I need your money. And so that's basically what I do.
So remember, you don't realize this, listeners, or Marty may not know this either, but I oversaw a fairly large clinical research program up at Cornell Medical School in a past life. I was a professional administrator. So I knew
one of the better ones in the country too, by the
way. Cornell is a remarkable place, and I chose to stay there for the arc of my career, 16 years.
Wow, that's great.
10 years before then out in Boston. But the heart of that point was this: there's a lot of competition, and it's vetted out through things at NIH.
Yes.
It's vetted out through other kinds of foundations. A lot of it comes down to the cost of doing business. And so NIH will award a particular researcher. They'll fund somebody whose cost of doing business is, 40% of what it may be in New York City. And then they have to take those collections and make a decision. You know, the cost of doing what your research is, is as important,
right,
almost as you, important as you just, your research.
Yeah, you just described the incremental approach.
I sure did.
And so what our idea is that the cure for cancer will not come from an incremental NIH gate kept approach. Our belief is that we must disrupt. We must, as patients, demand that we do this differently. And you know what? We can't demand that unless our money is on the line and we step up and we do, we follow through. We are involved and we are making demands, but we are also contributing, because otherwise it's just, it's just debate. It's just philosophy.
Ideally, our organization does not exist a few years from now.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what we want. We want you to Google cancer to find out what it was.
Yeah, that's right.
So your skin in the game really is building a piece of software that's going to your Atlantic BT, a remarkable gift, a remarkable vote of confidence, but it sounds like they knew what they were doing.
Yeah, either that or, I made the sale of my life. So,
no, I think they made the hire of theirs, darling. And then I want to ask you, when you consider moving forward, what's next? We're going to build this thing. You're going to sell stuff. You're going to make oodles of money and pass it all right to the direct resources. And where does that leave development? Where does that leave the big fundraisers from Duke, the big fundraisers over at Harvard Medical? What are you going to just take away their jobs?
No, changing their approach, hopefully.
I think we're adding too. I mean, I don't think we're really even changing it all that much, because the focus on most development offices is on the kind of what I call the Richie Riches, the people that can write $1 million check like you and I, write a $10 check, And so, yes, those people are incredibly, amazing, and they're very generous, many of them. But foundation money. That's kind of their two twin prongs. I would rather have 50 bucks from 1 million people online, because that's what I know. That's what I was trained to do, And so
that's what we want.
And so the other thing is, to me, that means we're in this together. One of the things about having cancer is you never feel more alone in your life than when you hear the word cancer in your name in the same sentence. And so our idea here is to say, all of this sing kumbaya around the fire, stand up to whatever is great, but we're going to waterboard cancer. We're going to kick its rear end. We're going to solve the problem, and we're going to do so by disrupting the usual ways of doing things. So that's kind of what we're doing. And so therefore, it's not surprising that we're riding on my 401k, So,
but still adding to what is currently going on is not trying to change one.
That's right.
Tear them down.
That's a very important idea, because what I'm saying to the development departments at Duke and UNC and the others is, hey, that's great, and I think we will actually be able to identify another generation of Richie Riches for you from our work with crowdfunding, because some of those Richie Riches are going to come in and make a $500 donation, and then they're going to make another $500 donation, and they're going to make another $500 donation. At that point, you need to call them on the phone, So or else I'll call them on the phone and say, hey, that's pretty incredible. Tell me what you're doing, because that's what they're good at. I mean, they're amazing. These are very hardworking people. They don't get paid anything. They're doing it for love, not money. And they're very good at developing those kinds of relationships. In fact, I would say UNC, they're very entrepreneurial as well. I mean, they their attitude is, we have a group of researchers that aren't ready yet for NIH, and so they create their own farm system. And they, what they do is they then pitch the Richie Riches on supporting their farm system, right? And so what I'm saying is, let's put your farm system online. Let's let everybody get involved, you know? So.
And you can imagine, it's, I agree with you, money does talk at the table. But without people participating in clinical trials, without those subjects, without recruiting those human patients, you really can't go very far very fast.
Yeah, and the other thing about money is that nobody parts with their money unless they have an emotional connection with what's happening. You know, if they don't feel like it's important to them, then they don't care.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
So what we're trying to do with stores and with crowdfunding is we're trying to say, participate, step up, get involved. If we're doing something wrong, tell us. You know, if you have an idea, tell us, because that's what, you know, that's what the web is. I mean, the web is this amazing feedback loop. And, you know, if you ask me the one secret to making $30 million online, it would be this: do what people tell you to do. You know,
yep. So. And funding's going to get harder to come by.
And you know? I need final thoughts. Tell me, Drew, what do you think? What are you going to be doing in a year from now?
Curing cancer.
You betcha.
You know, so for, you know, anyone I don't know, for anyone I do know. So it's something I'm finally giving back. I don't have a history of being very civic minded and giving and giving. So it's definitely a new direction for Drew, and I'm enjoying it.
Well, we're glad you're with us in the ride.
Me
Tell
too.
Me, Marty, final thoughts?
Yeah, my final thoughts are that we need to disrupt. We need to have a new cancerpreneur revolution that focuses on research. And, you know, that's what I'm all about. That's what my foundation will be all about. Drew's absolutely right. If my foundation will never self-perpetuate. If my foundation runs out of money, it runs out of money. We stop. We will not do things to just keep the foundation going. We will do things to cure cancer, and that alone. So
listeners,
we believe Drew. tech can cure cancer.
That's right.
Here's to the power of the web.
Right.
Well,
exactly.
Gentlemen, I cannot tell you, Bill and I are thrilled that you joined us today on Courage Cocktail.
Thank you so much.
A particularly great brew. I'm so happy.
Thank you, Leanne.
That you're here.
Yeah, and this was great.
Well, you really got to the heart of the matter, which is www.storyofcancer.org. I really encourage you all, listeners, check out that website. It leads to many different other websites. And the most important thing is to consider the value of survivorship. What does it mean to survive, and how do you pay back? How do you recognize the gift of life? It takes all different forms, all different stories. Maybe that's where we can begin to get our listeners up to the plate and helping you out.
Yeah, well, expect to hear your voice sing www.storyofcancer.org many times, because I'm going to be playing that on my website over and over and over again.
Well, that's good. Anytime you need my voice, it's yours.
Great, thank
you.
So,
listeners, I'm grateful for you joining me today. I want to thank you. We have another program scheduled for the next few weeks. We look forward to your tuning in with us every Wednesday at noon Eastern Time. And if you can, take the podcast at Courage Cocktail, which is on Facebook, Twitter, at Courage Cocktail, and of course, the old reliable website, www.friendlyfearnotebook.com. And of course, Friendly Fear Notebook was the book that started this radio show. Thanks so much for joining us. I want to thank my sponsor, the Triangle Swim School of Cary, North Carolina. And I look forward to being with you next week when you bring the lunch and I'll bring the Courage Cocktail.
WCOMLP, Chapel Hill, Carrboro.